This is Brock and Salk
from the Alaska Airlines Studio.
Streaming everywhere at 710sports.com and the 710 Seattle app.
All right, this 8 o'clock hour here is brought to you by Precor Home Fitness. We can talk to Todd McShay of ESPN in just a moment or two. He's got the sidelines for the Utah game, Utah versus Washington on Saturday, just as he did a couple weeks ago at Auburn. So looking forward to talking to Todd, who's had some up-close and personal experience here with the Huskies. Yep. And while we got him, maybe we'll ask about some of the Seahawks rookies and what he's expecting, et cetera. So it's going to be fun to talk to him in just a minute or two.
You surprised? Huskies 6.5-point favorites? I don't know if that line has moved since then.
No, I'm not.
I don't even know if I'm looking at the right line or what have you. But
no, I've always, I mean, they're a good team, and I feel like you've just sort of started making excuses for them, like Utah's this hard place to play.
Okay.
Like, I saw Utah last week. They didn't look that good against, like, Northern Illinois or something. And so, mm-hmm. like, yeah, I'm not that surprised that the Huskies are big-time favorites.
But you've seen Utah the last 2 years against Washington.
No, I know.
I'm not making excuses. You've watched them the last two years.
They're not excuses. They're, like, preemptive
No,
excuses.
I'm asking you to recall the last two seasons that you've actually played them and and went to their place, and Dante Pettis had the punt return.
Right.
And last year, you know, the miraculous drive by Jake. Hey, by the way, Jake Browning did deliver in a big moment
last year. That was awesome.
And beat Utah at home to get them to the Fiesta Bowl.
Yep.
So you've seen this game with this team the last 2 years, Smarty Pants.
All right. I'm just saying. I mean, the Vegas says it's 6.5.
Right.
I'm wondering if that's because the rest of the country knows that Washington should win this game, and you're looking at it and saying, well, there's a lot of reasons why it'd be okay if they don't. That just seems to be the way it always goes in these spots.
Oh, that's funny.
We can ask Todd McShay about it. Todd McShay is going to be on the sideline for it. Hi, Todd. Good morning.
Morning, fellas. How you doing?
We're doing great.
Oh, Salk's stirring me up, McShay. He loves to do this. Whenever we talk Huskies, especially, Kyle, our producer, who you just talked to, Super Coug himself, hates the Huskies. I mean, just hates the Huskies with every fiber of his being. Salk knows how to push my buttons a little bit and get me all wound up and frustrated. I don't know. Do you work with anybody that ever does that to you? Anybody that just kind of stirs it up?
There's a long list, man. It starts with Kuiper, obviously.
Yeah, I would think so.
What do you think of these Huskies? You had a chance to see them a couple weeks ago at Auburn. Now you're going to get them again. Are they a team that can be in the Final Four at the end of this thing, College Football Championship?
I think they are. I think they ran into kind of a buzzsaw with Auburn in the first game. You know, flying across the country, and I'm not making excuses. It is what it is. But flying across the country, playing in a stadium that was probably 90-10. I mean, at best 85-15 in terms of Auburn fans dominating the crowd. And they also, you know, they got off to such a poor start in that game, but then bounced back. And I thought midway through the third quarter that Washington had kind of wrestled away the momentum and was about to finish Auburn off. And it's just a really good Auburn team that defensively is loaded up front. And I think if there's an area of the offense for Washington that will need to improve moving forward, it's probably the offensive line. And they played better in week two against lesser competition. They'll get another test this week at Utah. But when it's all said and done, I think Jarrett Stidham outplayed Jake Browning in that game. I think both defenses played excellent football, especially in the red zone. Both teams made some offensive mistakes in the red zone. It was a really close football game for four quarters, and it was sloppy with penalties, but it was a lot of fun to be at that game and to see two of the 10 best teams in the nation go at it in kind of a lopsided situation in Auburn's favor.
You and the crew had a chance to talk to Coach Peterson yesterday on your production call. How would you characterize his mood and feelings?
Truth be told, I could not be on that call, but our good buddy Steve Levy sent out very, very good notes. I'm looking at him right now, a couple pages worth of notes. according to kind of what I've read and what Levy's saying is that it was just frustrating. You know, they were very frustrated. He uses the word frustrating twice in the first two sentences, Coach Peterson does. Just saying, playing a caliber of team like that, right out the gate, you've got to be ready. We were in a lot of areas. But I think the red zone frustration is kind of the thing that stands out in terms of what he's talking about. And how I think that the focus moving forward and the self-evaluation from that game was, let's carry less in terms of volume of plays. Let's not try to do too much, but let's focus on executing a smaller volume or catalog of plays, if you will, just executing it better and really knowing what we want to do when we get in the red zone next time. Because, I mean, it was killer. They had 2 third-down penalties that set them back, one that brought back a touchdown, I believe. They missed a field goal from 40 yards out, so technically wasn't red zone, but they get down to the 23. And they had the fumble, the one fumble as well, and the pitch play where it looked like they were going in to score. So, you know, you're talking about multiple times in and around the red zone where they had driven the ball and looked like they were getting ready to at least get field goals and wind up coming away with 0 points multiple times. It's real tough to win, not technically on the road, but essentially on the road in that kind of situation against that kind of team.
We had a lot of conversation in town here about Jake Browning. What do you make of him?
I think he made an unusual, inexperienced type of mistake early in that game, which I didn't think that he had a lot of room for error given the situation and the team they were playing. That wasn't the difference in the game, but it certainly was an early setback that they had to, you know, grind it to come back from with the interception. He was running out of time, and I was standing right behind him, probably 20 yards behind him, and you could see he didn't see where the receiver was. He was hoping the receiver was somewhere, and it just wasn't the case. So he made that mistake, but then he settled down. And, you know, he'll be the first to tell you, he's not going to win any combine awards or 7-on-7 awards in terms of big arms and looking the part and all of that. But I do really, the more I've kind of been around him and studied him play, I really appreciate how he attacks the preparation of the game. I mean, you can just tell his intelligence. He's really hard on himself, both good and bad. He's a stickler for details. And he gets the most out of that body that I think is humanly possible, and he just keeps fighting. So he's I think he's going to have a good year. I think he's going to bounce back from last year, and I think having a game against Auburn in the first game, even though it's a loss, can turn out to be a really good experience, because they're not going to face much tougher a situation the rest of this year than the one they faced in week one. So they can always kind of go back to that and say, you know, even though we didn't win that football game and we don't care about, you know, moral victories, we know we're just as good as Auburn. And that's a team that's right now, I believe, in the top five.
Tom McShay here with us from ESPN. He'll be on the call Saturday night in Salt Lake City with Levy and Greasy, and a cool chance for you guys to see these Huskies two of the first 3 weeks. Now, I don't know if you know the name Bill Riley. Bill Riley is the voice of the Utah Utes, Todd. He's a big deal in the state of Utah. I got a big radio show. He joined our afternoon show yesterday, Bob Gross and Tom, and Bill Riley said this about Jake Browning.
What are your impressions of Jake Browning?
As far as football? He's really solid. Well, I mean, I met him at Media Day, and he was kind of cocky and arrogant this year at Media Days.
Was he really?
He was kind of like, hey, you know, I'm back here to do this again. I guess I'll talk to you guys. That was kind of what he gave us this year at Media Day down in Southern California.
Is McShay, has Browning ever struck you as cocky and arrogant and dismissive?
No. I mean, I'm not going to bash somebody I don't know, but that seems pretty crazy to me. I think probably a confident young man who's showing up to something multiple times. And I mean, let's face it, it's not, as a player, it's not really your favorite day answering all those questions. You'd rather be doing a lot of other things, but he gave him the time and you know, he's been good. He was good. He came on our media our ESPN, college football preseason meeting. He came and he talked to us there. He sat down and talked to us for about 30, 35 minutes when we visited, Washington, and went to the campus in the preseason for one of the practices, and it's been very easy to deal with. I think he's very intelligent, and I really appreciate his approach. I don't care about guys being nice guys or, you know, how they treat the media. I mean, obviously, it's good when guys are outgoing and it gives us more to talk about, but what I'm focused on is what the player is and how he works and what he gets out of his teammates and what he gets out of himself. And I don't think there's anyone in that building that has a complaint about the way that Jake Browning handles himself.
Todd, I know you're going to be there for the game on Saturday, but we'd be remiss if we didn't spend a few minutes talking about the Seahawks rookie draft class, since obviously that's a big part of what you do for ESPN and your career. Obviously, Michael Dixon's going to be a rookie of the year. Do you think it'll be an offensive or defensive rookie of the year he wins? I don't know why you're laughing. Listen, it's not funny. He's going to be the rookie of the year. He's the best rookie in the league.
Oh, how about Will Disley?
Hey, he's good too. But come on, Michael Dixon is the best we've ever seen. All right, maybe. Who knows? Michael Dixon's amazing. I'm just kidding. But Michael Dixon is amazing, isn't it? I mean, like.
Hey, McShay, there was an article that said that Michael Dixon was worth 5 points, 6 points in that game in Denver. That he can be of that kind, almost a touchdown value. If you look at these analytical geeks that study all of this stuff, I mean, is he this phenomenal? Because I got to tell you, in our market, man, the guy is just trending and blowing up.
I mean, he's one of the best I've ever seen coming out of college. I'll give you that.
So is he defensive player of the year or offensive player of the year?
I think, let's see. That's a good question, actually. Yeah. That's a really good question.
Did you anticipate this?
I'm going to go defensive.
I guess, did you anticipate this? You're going to go defensive. Okay.
No, I love it. I love it. Let's break down how quickly he gets the ball out and his mechanics and everything else.
People get real nervous about a punter who can change the game. There's no doubt.
I love it.
How about the rest of this rookie class?
Honestly, though, all joking aside, he legitimately is one of he's one of the five or six best punters. I've told you this. I don't spend a lot of time on kickers and punters. I trust other guys who really like focus on that stuff and have all the numbers and analytics in terms of how quickly you're supposed to get the punt off and hang time and all of these other things. But this guy, just watching him live, we had him against Baylor, I think it was last year, and he was the MVP of that game, and they lost. I mean, he was the most impactful player on the field. In that game and in multiple games because of the way he could just flip the field in one play.
It's really amazing. How about the rest of this?
I still want to get back to Disley. You guys got three catches, 105 yards.
Well, what'd you think?
Pick, who's a blocking tight end.
Yes.
Is he going to be this good?
I mean, I certainly didn't expect it, but I guess in a team that's got some weapons and a quarterback that can create time. And that's a frustrating loss, obviously. I'm not telling you anything you don't know. But they would take the lead. What was it, like 11 minutes or so they take the lead? And then I think they got 3 or 5 yards in the final three drives. They just couldn't get it going. And Von Miller, I mean, that guy is just – he's one of the best to ever do it, and he did it again this past Sunday.
Last thing I want to ask you about, though, is Rashad Penny. I was really excited when the Seahawks drafted him. I know there were some who thought that it was a little too early. I just like the commitment to the running game, and I'd seen him a little bit in college, I think he's going to be a great pro. His debut was not fantastic, and there's some people here in the market who are already pretty much done with him and just want to go with Chris Carson nonstop. What do you think? Will Penny have a better career than he showed in his first game?
Oh, it's hard to have a worse start. I mean, he did have the 4 catches for 35 yards, but when you average 1 yard per carry, it's not a good start. Now, I even read earlier Pete Carroll said that, you know, that he was kind of rusty coming off of not practicing or something like that, you know, only 1 full week of practice, and that Carson's going to get more carries moving forward. Now, I don't know that will last, but I think what you need to see from Penny is that he continues to get better in practice and continues to understand and just show that he's ready to handle the speed of the NFL and those sorts of things. But I had a second round grade on him. I was a little surprised he went that early, but I wasn't that surprised. And there were a lot of teams out there that were looking at Penny in that late first round, early second round range. So he's a talent. He can catch the ball in the backfield. I think he's got to improve as a pass blocker. But to see just the 8 yards and 7 carries tells me that he's maybe not at 100% and has not yet adjusted to the speed of this game.
You know, it's funny, and I'll just let you go here with a compliment. Everybody has been talking about this Sean McVay video. Have you seen it, where he's recalling every play of his career and knows the down and distance and exactly what happened? Have you seen the sound or the video of that?
No, I haven't, actually.
It's actually awesome. You should look it up. It's pretty crazy. We're going to have some fun with Brock in that in a few minutes. But you guys, and you especially, you seem to have that same thing for every player you guys have ever scouted. Like, maybe it's not this, you know, a play, but it's, oh, yeah, I remember this guy. I remember the grade I had him. I remember his positives. Remember the negatives. It's incredible the depth in which you guys go, and Todd, you in particular. We really appreciate all the work you do, and thanks for coming on and joining us.
I appreciate that. You weren't here when I had to go look up my grade on Carson and see what I said because I couldn't remember 2 years ago.
Don't worry about it. Hey,
but I appreciate it.
Just say it with confidence and everybody will believe it. That's right. You go. All right. Thank you, man. Thanks again.
Thanks, Todd.
Todd McShay. That works, you know. If you just say it with great confidence,
oh, for sure. There's
you can no say questions. Anything and people will completely believe you.
I've got three things coming off.
All right.
Three little doodles that I wrote down right there. And I've been thinking about this Michael Dixon
thing. Why
are
people so mean?
I don't know.
What is the deal?
Gosh.
People are rotten to punters.
And closers. Okay, and I'm actually, listen.
Can I read the tweet that kind of started
this whole thing?
Yes.
Everybody's being mean, and Brock's not going to stand for it anymore. Let me read the tweet that started this. It came from Aaron Schatz, okay, who's at Football Outsiders, been with ESPN. He's a stats guy for football. He says, Seattle had net punting value of 3.8 points on Sunday, even after altitude adjustments. 4.9 points before adjustments. The only other team above 1.5 was Kansas City, and that was because they stripped the ball from the return man, not because of the punter. So Seattle has. Does that mean that Michael Dixon was worth nearly 5 points in the game?
Yes,
a 5 point
yes.
swing.
Yes,
like wins above replacement. In this case, he was worth it.
Yes.
He was worth 5 of their points.
Yes, because those guys with those algorithms and dig into that all of that data numbers. When you back an opponent up inside the 10 multiple times, that should set you up at least or darn near field goal range. Would require maybe one first down, one decent play from your offense to get yourself, if they're punting out of the back of their end zone, which they should have been if you could have got three and outs, but you didn't. You didn't. You let them then get out of that, which was a bit problematic. But, yeah, that's the kind of value he can bring. And I was honestly – let me geek out here for just a moment. I was honestly thinking about Michael Dixon, and I was thinking about the conversation we had with the special teams coach, Brian Schneider, in that workout, and I told you a little bit about it. But when you watch him, and this is what Schneider was talking about, how he's able to do what he does with the ball is the velocity of just his foot. But, no, I'm serious. And the whip that he creates is not unlike Eddie Diaz. The amount of movement and the whip that Eddie Diaz creates in his frame to throw a ball 100 miles an hour, there is some similarity with what Dixon can do with simply his foot speed and the way he then hits the ball, man. It's astronomical.
It does seem weird, and it's funny how it just there's a traditional football fan, analyst, and front office member. They just won't talk about it.
No.
They just don't hear about it.
No.
I don't care how good this guy is. I don't want to hear about it. I don't understand why. It's part of the game. Like, if it's a way to gain an advantage, why are people so opposed to
that? I guess is that they view it as a negative because they come on the field when you've not performed.
Well, no one says you want him out there punting a lot, but occasionally even good teams have to punt. Don't you want a guy who could be a weapon for you?
I would think.
It's weird to me that people would be so dismissive. I understand that generally a punter is not going to be as important as a quarterback or a wide receiver, a defensive end, or whatever.
Not generally. He's not.
But, like, if a guy is that good, isn't it a point – wouldn't you rather be good at that than not good at that?
Uh-huh.
Well, I don't want to talk about it. Right. I don't want to think about it. I don't care. Yes. All he's doing is punting.
Yes.
But, like, if he's better at it than everyone else, why is that a downside? Like, why be dismissive
of
that?
It's awesome.
It's so strange.
So not dismissive. Point number two, not dismissive but frustrating. Kyle, did you find any frustrated Chris Peterson with us through the years? Because, you know, we have sensed and felt some – frustration.
Yeah, not just with us, but at the podium and around, you know.
Everything that doesn't work, you need to ask.
Great.
Everything that doesn't work is a concern, so you guys don't even need to ask me that. Name something else that wasn't good. It's going to be the same thing.
Why is he so exasperated? Are people asking him about punters, too?
Stars? Is that another Joe question? Yeah, I'm really impressed with a lot of their stars. Let's just start there. Who do you got at the top of the list?
Why is he so grumpy, fans?
I don't know. He walks us to the line like being like one of the nicest guys that you could talk to on and off the air, like at Media Days this last year down in Southern California. You wouldn't have found one Bill Riley to say, oh, that Chris Peterson arrogant.
I'm not sure what you guys are saying, talking like.
But he walks this exasperation and frustration line. So not surprised to hear, even off of a pedestrian effort against North Dakota, he's got a little bit of an edge of frustration. And then the last thing is, you heard McShay say this. He said, The one thing you cannot say about Jake Browning is he doesn't get the most out of what he is. You cannot. You can criticize all sorts of different things about him, but there is no way you can say, yeah, Jake Browning's left some stuff on the table. He's not really developed. He hasn't gotten the most out of this. He has drained every ounce of his ability and every ounce of his God-giftedness and some of the lack thereof to do what he's doing right now. And therein lies one of his biggest issues, Mike. Come Saturday night, one of his big issues is he thinks he's King Kong, right? He thinks he's William Wallace, and I can do anything on this football field. And I think he's had a hard time realizing and really coming to believe the things that you're not. And that's okay. That's not a weakness. It's actually, I think, a tremendous strength. And if you look at guys that endure at the next level, most of them endure, Tom Brady, Peyton Manning, because they focus on what they can do. Don't try to be runners and create. Not thinking they need to prove to everybody and to the critics that say you can't do this. Peyton Manning didn't run a naked. Right? We didn't run that play. That was not in our playbook. Like, where's, you know, the play action? Where's the movement? Like, we don't do that. Why would we do that? Peyton's not going to do that. He can't do it. He can't do it nearly as well as he can do X, Y, and Z. You seen Tom Brady on a naked? No. Where he fakes like zone stretch and then he's got to sprint way out to his left. Never. Not one time, because they don't focus or do the things they can do. They just highlight everything they can do so well. And I hope Jake, over these next 10 weeks, certainly his four quarters in Salt Lake City, really just emphasizes that more than anything else.
Text messages here. Those same traditionalists who scoff at punters are ironically going by the same old adage that football is a game of field position. It's true. Right. I don't understand.
Right.
Well, we want to have good field position. We got to flip the field and time possession and put the other team in a bad spot. Well, how's your punter? I don't think about punters. Punting? I've never seen it.
Well, they're all the same, Mike.
Well, when the guy kicks the ball, believe that's black magic coming off his foot, so I'll bounce through clear out of bounds on the side.
Oh, here we go.
No way that guy did it on purpose.
Here's Southern guy.
As far as I can tell.
Why has it got to be dumb Southern guy?
As far as I can tell, the punter not even a real person.
I think we had a Northwest guy yesterday you were arguing with us about, a really smart journalist, right? Danny, I think he was arguing. You hear Dave Wyman. You don't even have to use dumb Southern.
Those punters, I tell you what, I'm not sure they're fully human. I'm not sure they belong in a football field. I don't want to scout them. Don't want to think about him. Certainly wouldn't draft one. Not in the fifth round. Trade up for one. Kind of idiot does that. Guy only flips the field by 60 yards every time he kicks the ball. Worth 5 points a game. But I won't do it. Don't trust it. Not gonna do it. Not gonna happen. Not my team.
Can you at least balance team runs this out the ball. With doing like Northeast hockey, Dad? See, like, can you just balance it out?
Lydia, you and I love it.
Up in the Northeast, they like their punters up in the Northeast. No, they understand on. When you got a punt, it's worth it to have a guy who's better than one who stinks. And so they actually spend some time thinking about it. Not down here. No, we don't want, and I won't have it on my football team because I think it's evil.
Lydia, you have the power to like drop stuff in, sound that can come right over
That's
him.
That's true.
You can do that. Get the name out your mouth. You can drop anything you want.
This guy from the football outsiders. He must be an outsider if he thinks this guy's worth 4.9.
I've been called a wet blanket most of my life.
4.9 points per game. If football outsider is exactly right, no football player worth 5 points in a game, let alone some guy walks onto the field just to kick it with his foot.
You know, I'm like the Mariners. I had nothing in the farm system.
All right, coming up next, enough of Southern idiot football douche. Let's do this, Brock. I shouldn't say that. I'm sorry. Brock, let's do this. More importantly, you had a bad game once
when?
In your career in 1997.
Oh boy.
And our expectation is that your memory is as good as Sean McVay's. Uh-huh. We'll put it all together next. You guys are going to want to be here for this. It's next on Brock and Salt. I am very calm.
You're listening to Brock and Salk.
Live from the Alaska Airlines Studios.
Streaming through the 710 Sports app and on 710sports.com.
Slip and slide, take it to the house. Brock and Salk, 710 ESPN Seattle. It's brought to you this hour by Precor Home Fitness. All right, Brock, have you heard this? Sean McVay is showing off a little bit. His arrogance. His
humble brag?
Humble, no, there's nothing humble about this. Sean McVay, jerk. Horrible human. No, he's a good guy, I guess. He's the coach, though, of the hated Los Angeles Rams, and he was participating in a little humble brag game yesterday where he was showing off his memory with a guy from Bleacher Report, right, who was asking him questions about plays in his career, and he remembers them all perfectly.
Week 12, Saints at Rams. 4:29 in the second quarter, 2nd and 7 on the Saints 7. What happens?
Oh, Josh Reynolds touchdown off schedule play versus a three-man rush.
You're absolutely right.
Are you kidding me?
You're unbelievable. Like now computer. We are going to go to, this is Sean McVay's time in Washington.
Oh, no.
So we're bringing it back to 2015, week 7. Bucks at Skins.
Yep.
2nd and 7 on the Tampa Bay 24. 58 seconds left in the fourth quarter.
Jamison Crowder wheel route down the right sideline.
Jamison Crowder wheel route down the right sideline. Set up the first down, and then how did that drive end?
Jordan Reed touchdown and a 4x1 individual ISO slant.
All right, so he's pretty good. He remembers everything.
That's crazy.
You don't think that's normal? Because I always hear, like,
keeping in mind that he's, what, 32? So it's not like he's got to go years and years and years back.
Yeah.
Also, like, I mean, golfers all do this with every shot. Oh, yeah, back on 7 second shot, I was looking to hit a high fade, and it kind of come. Like, they all do this, don't you think?
To a degree.
I hit that one a groove
there,
low.
There
so
is a,
back.
Like many things, there is a spectrum. And that is off the charts right there.
Got
I mean, you're going back 3+ years. You had not told him anything. He doesn't just remember, you know, tidbits of the play. He's telling you the formation there. A 4x1 set, isolating.
3-man rush from the defense.
Yeah, that's pretty. I think most that are in it right now can go back.
Your memory's the worst. And now you're going to sit here and be like, yeah, that's all right. It's okay.
I just think, no, I'm not. Of course, it's better than mine. That's why he's an NFL football coach. But I just think I see baseball managers and pitchers and hit. Like, a lot. I think there's somewhat common among pro athletes and coaches.
I would not say. This is like AP calculus.
Yes.
Most are going to have algebra. Most could probably get to geometry. This is AP.
He's a little cut above.
Yeah.
All right, well, Brock, we wanted to test how good you were at this.
Oh, no.
How you are. You've been out of the league for a little while.
A little while.
We're going to play a little game show with
you. A little while.
It's all about one game, though.
14 years.
This is all about the 1997 Apple Cup. Was that a good game or a bad game?
Let's see. 97 Apple Cup. I've totally washed that game away. 97 Apple Cup. How old are you, Kyle?
10 years old.
Oh, God.
Let me start by with a couple of simple questions.
What was the final house.
What was the final score of that game?
Final score was, what, 41-35?
I don't know.
Something like that?
Correct.
Okay.
How many interceptions did you throw
five.
In that game?
Yeah, I threw five.
Let's see if you can
I
remember.
I think I threw one in every quarter.
Let's see if you can remember what happened in them.
Okay.
Here is what happened in the first interception.
First interception, we were heading from the lakeside down towards the horseshoe. We decided to run like we would have called it like 243. We're faking an ISO, trying to run a deep post to Jawaan Hooker over the safety because the safety's cheated. Torrey Holloman's brother was a cheater. He loved to come cheat against the run, and we were trying to throw a deep post over his head.
Play action, Hewitt looking up top. Nobody there. Hooker stopped and intercepted at the 27.
Is that accurate?
Yeah.
Sounds accurate.
Jawaan had a pulled hamstring.
All right, you're one for one. We're going to give you that one, too.
Okay.
All right. What happened on the second pick?
Yeah, the second pick is a deep over. It's going now the other way towards the lake. It was third down. This was a deep, a couple deep posts, deep over routes, and this one was on me. This was a big CE critical error on my grade sheet.
Third and long now. You didn't want to be in these situations very often today. Going deep, Coleman's out there, and it's picked off. Number 2, Ray Jackson with the interception, his second of the year.
Yep.
And the second of the game, and against him, they try to go deep, and it comes back to haunt him.
Yeah, it did. The third one, we can just continue to play this game. The third one is, I think now the Lamont Thompson show starts where he picked off 3 of them. Third one is also going into the lake. We run a little sluggo concept here, and I have Jerome Paython wide open on a slant and go, and I think I get hit on this one at least.
Stewart's going to throw. Third of the afternoon.
Nice third.
Lamont Thompson had 2 last week. He's got 1 this week. The flag's down, but another huge turnover. And you were grabbing that arm.
Oh, you sure were. I watched the video of this. Kyle and I were watching the video.
There's some
Hewitt grabbed that arm for like 10 minutes.
Yeah, there's a little Roethlisberger there.
There's a point where I'm pretty sure you like waved up to the camera, like pointed at your arm, and then like rubbed it to like, see?
It's my left elbow.
It's the elbow. It's not good. It hurts. I got hit on the throw. You see that? You see the elbow?
Are you done?
And you did get hit. It looked like it hurt. And then
that's
Salk
fine.
Was kind
of
razzing on it.
Course.
Then they showed the replay, and then they cut back to you on the sideline.
Yep.
You're still holding the arm.
That's bad.
Keeps holding that.
The fourth one, I think, is an in cut to Jerome Paython that goes a little high off of his hands. That would have been Fox 3 X Dagger. He's going to run the in cut. again, versus play action versus a zone team, should have been pretty good, but it was
not. This time, and through the hands, this one's picked off again at the 40-yard line. Lamont Thompson had two a week ago against Stanford. Guess what? History repeats itself.
Mm. Yeah. That was also going from the lake to the horseshoe end of things. It was really not good either way. The fifth and final one before Jim Moore got on the goalposts, his crowning achievement in life, and helped tear that thing down and take it out of Husky Stadium. The fifth one was also off of Jerome, I believe.
Hewitt looking over the middle, hit as he throws. Payton out there. Kicked off. Intercepted at the 10-yard line. And for the second time today, a ball that hit Jerome Payton in the hands, a little bit high, but it did hit him, tipped up, and then picked off.
Yeah, that one was like a volleyball set. Set, spike, into my heart.
You're still running your elbow after that one?
Let's just volley this sucker up, and let's give Lamont the hat trick, and let's let the Cougs go to their first Rose Bowl in 50-something years.
Were you still
65
still
years?
Rubbing your elbow
65
after
years?
That, or
what
not?
Was it, 65? No, I don't think so.
67.
Gosh, I can remember.
I get a text message.
I can remember every one of those.
Text message here from a Coug who says, I actually had class with Lamont Thompson. He had the biggest hands I have ever seen the one day in that semester that I saw him in class. He showed up one day.
Yes.
So there you go.
Brock, to your credit, I didn't remember, having gone through and picking all those highlights out.
Yeah.
One of those INTs was distinctly probably on you, a bad throw.
Right.
The other four were either bad luck or your receivers not helping you out.
It was just one of those amazing days, man. I remember talking to Bill Diedrich, who's about 5'5". I mean, he was a little QB coach. He's a great guy. And I remember, I think after the third one, coming to him on the sidelines, like, what is happening? You know, what is happening? Because these plays are here. Like, I feel pretty good about this, you know?
One of those days.
What is happening here?
You've told us this story before, though, of being in the shower later and realizing that, hey, I'm the one, you know, a lot of these picks weren't my fault, but when you look at the score sheet, it's going to say that
you,
I threw five of them and I better go own it.
Sign the checks, baby. Yeah. That's exactly right. I went into the locker room and our SID, little Jim Daves, who's now at Virginia, said to me, hey, and he too was a little guy, said, hey, just give me a quote and I'll take it to the press. You know, everybody else was running out of there because that was like our third loss of the year. Horribly disappointing after being 7-1 and back in the top 10. And
would you have gone to the Apple Cup or to the Rose Bowl if you'd won?
No, I think UCLA would have gone.
Okay. Yeah. So you would have put Cade McNown in the Rose Bowl?
Yeah.
And during that game, they're showing highlights of UCLA at USC, Skip Hicks.
Oh, yep, dude. Big that's day. My guy.
And you were down there.
Wait, that's UCLA at USC?
Yep. Were you at that
or
game?
Was it USC at UCLA?
I'd have to.
I went to USC UCLA in 2000, I think it was, or maybe 99.
Yeah. So 97.
No, maybe it was then. I don't know. Maybe it was 97 because it was Skip Hicks and Cade McNown. If McNown came out the next year, USC beat him, even though UCLA was good.
As hard as that day was in every one of those, and Mike Heward would tell you, some days peanuts, some days shells. Mm. And that was a lot of shells. Mm. There is not obviously a more memorable day. And the post, you know, and going and talking to the media and dealing with that and congratulating Bill Doba and Mike Price and legitimately like, hey, man, you guys beat me and you beat us. That's a day I'll never forget.
A lot of text messages coming in here. Brock, I love you, man, but this game is mean. see how my arm was. bless your heart, Brock. Lamont was the man. I love this segment. Can we do it every other week?
Sure.
The reason Salk's not an NFL coach is because of his bad memory. Hey. And then let's see. Thanks, guys, in reminding us how bad Brock actually was. But you guys are a bunch of do-nothing haters. Well, there's no reason all of those things can't be true. And
they want some retrospective hating on Brock because they feel like they missed the boat because they were too supportive when he was there.
For the record, Lydia had nothing to do with any of this, and she's kind of been holding her nose throughout the entirety of this segment.
Very uncomfortable. Come on.
All right, coming up next, we'll switch gears. Enough making fun of Brock. Let's congratulate champions. Up next on Brock and Salk.
Good news.
Yeah!
Bad news. No news. Now, here's Brock and Salk.
All right, it's Brock and Salk here, 710 ESPN Seattle, and we are ready to see what is in the news.
Good news, bad news, no news.
The Storm swept the Mystics for their third title in franchise history.
Bad news. I wanted a Game 5 back here, defining Game 5, celebrated in Seattle. Why do you got to go sweep them? Why do you got to go just wipe out the Mystics like that? It's just bad news. Selfish.
What's the matter with you?
What?
Stop it. It's not becoming of you.
That is great news. Titus jumping for joy. Haley giggling, so happy. We were all watching that game last night. To be able to flip over from a not-so-good game to that one and take that in for 2 hours. Congratulations to Sue, to Brianna, to Jewel, to the entire organization. Well, well done.
Yeah, it was a tremendous little run for them, and I'm not going to pretend like I was there from the beginning. I have not been. But thank you to everybody on Twitter and in this room and everywhere else who's gotten me into watching this here in the last couple weeks. It was a blast. What a fun, great team, and champions now for the third time in the Storm's history. It is awesome. The very best of news.
And they just played such unselfish ball.
They're good.
And you just saw that last night. Like, the role development, you know, through the course of the game, they play, everybody is involved. Like, man, it's just the essence of team. As you said earlier, culture, just great news.
Good news, bad news, no news.
The Mariners are now 9.5 games out of the wild card and in fourth place in the wild card standings.
No news.
When do you get to talk? When it's official, right?
I have nothing to say right now.
Gene Segura was too sick to play yesterday.
So was James Paxton. So was I have nothing to say. I will not say anything about this for a couple more days, but I promise.
Well, yeah,
I promise I will eventually say something.
It's as bad and dumpster fire bad news as we have had. They had an 11-game lead in June on Oakland. They now trail them by 9.5 games. The Rays had passed them. The Rays sold at the deadline. I did put out a poll, and people are interested. There are like 8,000 people that responded to it. Like, what in the heck happened? And everybody, 54%, the majority, pointed to the hitting, which I do as well. It continues to be absolutely anemic. They throw away a bat. Their situational hitting is horrific. And this
How
has been
the defense, oh, man. Multiple error game again.
It just feels, it feels like they've quit on each other and they've quit on their skip. And that feels horrible.
Was Lydia just critical?
No, I mean, that's a fact.
I mean, still, there's a lot of ways to spin fast.
Remember that stretch run that they had that was so impressive where they set, I don't know if they set a record, but they just had that streak of no errors.
Like,
and
eight
they were
games
on
then
fire.
Yes.
I think they won a couple of bats without an error just the other day.
Okay, now you did. Yeah.
Next.
Good news, bad news,
well,
no news.
So I'm not talking about it.
Like, can't say anything nice, don't say anything at all kind of mentality?
That's where I'm at.
Yep.
I learned from you, Lydia.
Kind of.
Yeah, no.
I'm trying.
Husky men's basketball schedule, the non-conference, was released yesterday. And there's some pretty tough opponents on that list, including they've got to head down and play Auburn in Alabama.
Playing Auburn, playing Virginia Tech, playing Gonzaga. Yeah, this is not Mike Hopkins trying to pad his schedule in the non-conference and go 11-0, and I love it. He's not ducking. He knows that he's going to get his team ready. In fact, it was going and beating Kansas last year in Kansas, right? In Lawrence, Kansas, that kind of started a little bit of that momentum in the country. Looking at what Mike Hopkins was doing, his team is going to be better. They're more talented this year. They're deeper than they were a year ago. And I love playing this kind of non-conference. Great news.
I kind of forgot about, kind of forget about the Husky basketball team now and again. And
tougher together.
Yeah, I kind of forgot that they had that good run last year and that Hopkins really showed, I think, in his first season that he's going to be a quality coach in this conference, and looking forward to seeing what the future has. So good on them. Go out and play some people, get noticed, and hopefully go make the tournament.
Good news, bad news, no news.
There's a skunk on the loose in the Raiders locker room.
Great news.
A skunk got loose in our tunnel. I think that's what screwed us up a little bit.
Is he actually using this as an excuse?
I mean, I don't know if he's going full Kangol on us here.
Like, it screwed them up a little
Bruce
bit.
Arians.
Like, I'm sure if it would have been...
thought it was interesting that it was only raining when we had the ball.
There you go. Thought it was interesting that skunk on the
game
to our tunnel.
Got held up in the tunnel for another 10 minutes.
With a skunk. It's a good thing they didn't combine those two stories. Stuck in your own tunnel with a skunk.
The best line was a reporter asked Gruden if he saw the skunk, and Gruden said... You don't really need to see a skunk, you know.
Have you seen the video of the skunk with the lions? There's a video online that I saw the other day. It's one of those viral video deals of the skunk in between, like, a whole bunch of, you know, pride of lions. Huh. And the lions are terrified of this skunk.
Really?
If a lion could hold its nose, it would be in this video. Like, they're just desperate to get away from this thing.
Which of the three Hewitt brothers, there's only one, but which of the three actually kicked a skunk?
Luke.
Listen.
That was the unanimous
vote. We were saying
vote
Luke back here before you finished the story.
That was Luke.
Yeah. Had to be Luke.
Had to be
Luke.
Over there.
The idea of a creature larger than a gorilla with an odor like a skunk might seem far-fetched.
That's why you weren't inviting him on vacation and all these trips that you were going
right
on.
Imagine what he would have done on that salmon fishing.
Well, as you know, I am sometimes the skunk at the picnic.
Oh, I miss Phil the skunk.
Phil, where are
Phil,
you,
Phil, come
man?
Back. Come back to us, Phil the
I
skunk.
I really love stuff like Iron Maiden, stuff that's wickedly heavy.
I think his music shop shut down.
What's the name of the shop down there, Kyle?
An Olympia.
Guitar or something?
It's a Music 6000. Oh, music something. We found some YouTube videos of Phil giving guitar lessons.
Really?
Wickedly heavy stuff, as you're
saying. I miss Phil the skunk so much.
So much.
I really do. He's one of my
number one missed callers.
Used to be one of my favorite things on this show, and his irritation level.
I think he just got so sick and tired of you and I, like Doug Marone's
not watching
the Super Bowl.
I've been watching football longer than both of you have been alive, okay?
I think we just burned out
anyway. Well, as you know, I am sometimes the skunk at the picnic.
Everything is awesome. Everything is cool.
Phil the skunk.
Everything is awesome.
The skunk at the picnic.
Hi, Phil the Skunk. How are you?
I have a contrarian view, the more realistic view to your irrational exuberance. Quite frankly, I think it's a bit demeaning.
All right, that's enough. Sorry about that. I miss Phil the Skunk. How can we get him back?
I miss that guy so badly.
Put him on the top five board, just see if he figures it out.
Yeah, true.
Phil the Skunk, if you call in, you immediately get on the top five board.
Top five.
If you know Phil
out
the Skunk, or well, just get him on, man. I miss this guy. He needs to be back in the top five board where he belongs. That's good news, bad news, no news today. Who's on there right now, Brock? I know we threw somebody on the other day. There's a lot of unfamiliar names. You didn't make the moves.
No, I got to put Taylor on there.
Was it Taylor? It How do you even Taylor remember that name?
It was Taylor.
Taylor's the guy who had called 5 years ago, and then yep, he's back. Yep. All right, so Kendall is going to be out of number one. I think Roger's back up to the top. Jesse and Bothell's out. What, who are you taking off there?
Some guy that I don't even remember.
Well, all right, well, it's fine. Brock's taking people off. All right,
just the irony of that moment where you said that a lot of people can do the Sean McVay thing, and you're like, how do you even remember
but
that?
But I can't. I'm not saying I can.
I mean,
Lydia,
that was like all of yesterday.
But
that
I'm not saying
so long
I'm
ago
not saying I can do it. I'm saying lots of other people in that profession
okay
can.
Yeah, I'm not that impressed.
Well, hold on. So if Ryan Healy hits a home run that goes 425 feet, and then afterwards, I'm like, you guys are crowing about what an unbelievable home run it is. And I'm like, well, a lot of other people can hit a home run 425 feet. Can I not say that because I can't hit a home run 425 feet?
Well, it is a little bit of a classic. Well, because I can't do it, it must not be that impressive.
I don't think so.
So
no,
that's just diminished.
That is not it. It's because all the other coaches do stuff like that.
Sheesh. Also, it's just particularly ironic to me because you're the one that insisted he go on the board. You were like, I love this guy.
Yeah, he was good, but I don't remember his name. He was good. Then we move on. Like, that's why Brock's got to keep the board. Does no one take notes anymore? That's how you remember things. You write them down. I didn't get a chance because Brock's doing all the writing over there. You guys are screwing this up. We have an important thing we need to do, and you guys are making me mad. Is Seattle too hard on his quarterbacks? That's the question we're trying to find out. Don't just giggle over there. This is your topic.
I know, I got the top five board ready for some callers.
Brock thinks that Seattle is just too hard on its quarterbacks. So we want to hear from you guys. 206-421-3776. Is Seattle too hard on its quarterbacks? That's next on Brock and Salt.